Hello, and welcome to episode 60 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Breakroom. I'm your host, Brad Schreffler. This week on the show, I am joined by Roland Chidiak, a classroom teacher, grades 4 and 5, now 2, and education podcaster out of Ontario, Canada. He is passionate about integrating technology into his classroom. I've known of Roland since I started working with the VoiceEd Radio Network, and we've really never ended up on a show together until now, and I just knew his voice would be a great addition to my show. Roland and I talk about the weird process of transitioning from one school to another, the reflection process, how we as professionals deal with change, good and bad, and the dreaded them and how they affect teachers. Roland is now only the second guest to ever get the distinction of a two-part episode. The first was, interestingly enough, Roland's good friend and Decoded co-host Chris Clough. But this week's episode is all the lead-up to my typical three questions, and next week will be the second half. That's right, next week. I'm officially back to school, and that means the Planning Period Podcast will go back to its usual every week release. If for no other reason than to avoid the regular emails from my dad complaining about having to go on a bike ride without a new episode, I am so glad to be back for my second school year as a podcast host. So, sit back and enjoy episode 60 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Roland Chidiak. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brad Schreffler, and I'm really excited today, like personally really excited today to get to sit down and talk to a fellow podcaster who's been on a couple different shows, another member or maybe former member, he might say, of the VoiceEd family, and a guy who, when I joined VoiceEd, was one of the first podcasts I listened to and I really connected with. So I'm really excited today to be able to introduce Roland Chidiak. And how's it going, man?
Good, Brad. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Enjoying my summer and feeling good about it.
I have to say, I'm really happy to be on your podcast for a number of different reasons. The first one is, and you and I were talking on what Chris and I call the on-ramp, like before.
I love that term, by the way. I love the on and off-ramp terminology, but I really want to just be able to sit in on your on and off-ramp one time.
You know what? We're working on that, but we're both worried we might lose our jobs. So it's one of those things where even if we did expose people to the on-ramp and the off-ramp, it still wouldn't be as authentic, we think, as it normally is. But let's see what we can do about that, okay? So anyway, Chris Clough. It's his thing. He's also a member of the VoiceEd Radio family, and he has a cool podcast called Chasing Squirrels. And he also is a co-host of a podcast him and I do called Decoded, which maybe we'll talk about, maybe we won't. But Clough talks about the on-ramp and the off-ramp to a podcast. And that's basically the time you spend talking before you hit record and the time you might spend at the end after you've hit stop. So when you and I were on our on-ramp today, I was explaining how as I was driving away from the VoiceEd house or mansion, whatever you want to call it, you were pulling up. And so we never really got to connect the way that, you know, I've gotten to connect with the other people who are part of that family. And I have to say, I stepped away, I think, more from the on-ed mentors than VoiceEd, but I'm kind of coming back into the fold, which is neat. But I am personally excited about talking to you because I heard a podcast that you and Chris Clough did in the winter, and it was around like guns and schools in America. And you know what? It blew me away. The fact that, well, Chris had this idea, like he just felt the need to address the elephant in the room. And he knew that you were in the States. He was telling me a little bit because I'd met him face to face to chat. And he was telling me that he knew about you in terms of like your connection to guns, if that's even fair for me to say. But like your familiarity with them and your political perspective. And, you know, he thought he'd ask you if you were willing to talk about it. And you were. And so that blew me away that we had an educator in Canada and an educator in the States talk about this hot topic. And I felt like you really put it all out on the table. And so huge, huge props to you and much respect for, engaging Chris in that topic, and you live it. Like, you're there. You live in the States. You're dealing with whatever it is that this thing is. I don't even know what to call it anymore. We don't deal with that in Canada. Like, when I go to school in the morning, if I've upset a child the day before, I'm 98% sure that child's not going to come back with a firearm and try to harm me or anybody else. It's just not the way things operate here. So, you know, I was just blown away. So I'm really glad that I get to chat with you on your podcast, and I'm humbled that you would even consider talking to me on your show.
Hey, absolutely. You know, the Clough thing was really cool because I feel like it was one of those really powerful PLN moments where I think a lot of times we talk about the power of an online connection or a power of a PLN and how it can influence us, but it's not always as obvious to see the two-way street of it. And what was really cool about that is I was very outspoken especially when the Parkland shooting happened, and I was very outspoken, and it's been on my podcast. And because of that, Chris reached out and I did a show with him. But that was a great example where doing the show with Chris, which he reached out to learn from me, I learned so much from the resources he provided. And he gave me a whole list, that article that I would have never found because it was a Canadian article that was talking about, like, if those things would have happened in Canada. And then that article made its way back into my classroom to inform my discussion further with my students. And so that further informed them. And it was like this really cool example of a two-way street where, you know, the being connected online helped both of us improve and grow in our learning. And I just thought it was a really cool moment. So I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad that connected with you.
Yeah, thanks. It was great. Like, for me, it was not a turning moment, but like, it was a really cool moment in the podcasting EDU space for me, because people were talking to the same people and about the same things. And it's like, it was just the right amount of mix up for me to feel like excited again. And not to say that your podcast or Clough's podcast or Derek's podcast or any of the EDU players podcast, not to say that like they don't have anything to offer, but it just gotten to the point for me where it was like, okay, I've had enough of the EDU podcasts. And that's where I was like finding Tim Ferriss and Rogan and Rich Roll and listening to those guys talk to people about like life stuff, you know, because I just feel like at one point you listen to so many educational podcasts that I got tired. I was just tired of the EDU space, and it was time to kind of branch out and listen to other things that were going to help me become a better human, not just a better teacher, because I figure if I can be a better person, then that's going to help my teaching. But I was having a hard time reconciling the fact that becoming a better teacher might not make me a better person. So just that's kind of my fuzzy logic, and that's where I was going. But that episode really, it did something. It just, it broke a barrier for me. I'm not even sure what that barrier was or is. It was just, I felt that rush again that I got from originally listening to EDU podcasts.
That's a cool, that becoming a better teacher doesn't necessarily make you a better person, but becoming a better person will probably make you a better teacher. That's kind of cool. I like that.
That's my fuzzy logic.
You're already dropping mics on us. No, you're already dropping mics on it. I like it. But we got all wrapped up in our on-ramp and got all excited, and I have not asked you to give yourself a little introduction for my audience so they know who you are if they have not heard of you before. So could you do a little intro of who you are, what you're up to?
Sure. So my name is Roland Chidiac, as you said. I'm a classroom teacher in the Kitchener-Waterloo area in Ontario. So for the past 3 years, I've been teaching in the junior division, grades 4 and 5. I love to integrate technology into my classroom. I love to open the world up to my students using tech or any other way. It just so happens that technology is something that I've kind of always been comfortable with and I really enjoy. So I try to bring that into the classroom and I try to get my kids excited about that. I'm in the middle of a transition. I've decided to go back down to primary. So not only next year will I be teaching like grade 2s and 3s, but I've change schools. So now I'm transitioning to a new school. So I'm kind of, my headspace is there. I'm on Twitter. If people are interested in following and connecting, it's @rchids, CHIDS. On the side, I have a podcast with Chris Clough. It's called the Decoded Podcast, and it's about two dads who are also teachers, one in elementary, one in secondary. And it's around, you know, our week to week struggles and successes as classroom teachers and as parents, I guess. That's kind of cool because that started off as an experiment last summer, 1 week before school started. And it's, we've been able to go 40 episodes, a whole school year. Now we're starting what we call summer school, which is like, you know, talking about, what teachers do in the summer and kind of how we're progressing through that. I have a family. My partner, she is a teacher as well. I've got two young kids, so it's busy around here. Other than that, that's kind of my world. I'm even as we speak, I'm taking this opportunity of new school, new grade, new people to what I'm calling change my operating system and to change my habits. So I'm in the middle of a lot of things, and it's kind of cool because it's a really neat thing to capture in time, right? So when I say I talk to Brad on his podcast, I can listen to this episode and I can remember that when I introduced myself, I talked about my teaching, I talked about my family, I talked about my enjoyment and love for podcasting, but I also talked about like changing as a person and moving from one thing to another. And I feel like, as I talk about that and as I introduce it as part of who I am at the moment, it brings me like an excitement. I feel good about it. And I think it's important because I find people like to categorize people, and that's fair because I feel like you have to anchor yourself in your world where you live. But I think it's okay sometimes to, you know, pick up the anchor and float on into that water and then drop your anchor again. I don't really know you, but I'm going to get a flavor for you in this next little while. And who knows what that's going to be like in 6 months from now. So that's kind of my world right now. It's my summer, so I'm going to enjoy myself and take time to relax and reflect. But I'm also going to take time to prepare myself for the newness that's coming with this school year. Normally, and I'm sure you'd agree, when you're out of school for a few years and you know what classroom you're in, and you got all your resources and you just, everything's rolling. You know where everything is. You're familiar with the people. You're familiar with the administration. You're familiar with the school culture and the school community. You're on autopilot in the summer to some extent. Like, you know, you're going back to the same room, the same grade, the same teaching partner, the same principal. There's an automaticity. And with that comes, a feeling of calmness, but what I'm going through now, and I know you're moving too, and I'd love to hear a little bit about your perspective on that, is that now I'm shifting. I have to shift. I don't have that automaticity. And I was telling Clough earlier, we were talking on our podcast, and I was saying how that comes with some fear. And at this point, my arms are wide open. I'm ready to hug the fear and then just put it aside. So I'm ready to acknowledge, but I'm also ready to put it aside and not let it cripple me. So this summer is not a summer of automaticity. This summer is a summer of change, of awareness, and of planning in a way that I've not done in years. So that's who I am in a nutshell right now.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot to unpack just in that, but I want to say that I do definitely listen to the Decoded podcast with you and Chris, and Chris has been on my show before. And as we said, I've been on his, and Chris is a very reflective guy. And from what I know about you, especially now that I've been listening to Decoded, so are you, and you guys are both so great at showing that reflection and having that reflection publicly. I don't think you intentionally show that reflection. Like, I don't think you're setting out to do that. I think you're just both people that are totally comfortable reflecting and learning publicly and loudly. And I think it's so powerful to listen to that. And when I reached out to you guys most recently, I said, the two of you talking about transitioning and moving to a new school, it feels like you're literally speaking from my brain. And it's very weird to almost hear my own thoughts coming directly into my ears through headphones coming from someone else's voice, it almost makes me feel a little crazy sometimes, like I'm actually hearing voices. Because you guys are exactly that. Like you said, you know, when you stay in schools, same school over and over again, you're not worried about who the bookkeeper is, who the secretary is, who do I go to if I need supplies? What do I do if I want copies? How do I, because even in the same district where all the rules are more or less the same, every school functions very differently in my experience. Mm-hmm. And so to now, I'm like, I don't know how to do any of that. Like, I can't plan for anything. I don't know what to do. And I'm not a planner, but even still, it's like, now I feel like I have 50 extra things I need to worry about that I wouldn't have to worry about if I had stayed at the same school. And so, yeah, I totally agree that this summer is about thinking through what do I need? What are the critical components? Which is, it can be scary, but I think the flip side of that is it really lets you decide what things are most important and most central to your practice, right? Like I can say, okay, this is what I used to do there, but did I just do that because that's the way I've always done it, or because that's the way it worked there, or did I do that because that's what was best for me? And you really get to think through those things, I feel like. Do you agree?
Oh, totally agree. It's like, it's a refresh, right? Like, and some people do really well with that and some people don't. Like I guess if people in, I don't know about your system and the way your district works, but in my district, people apply to postings or they can put themselves on what's called an administrative transfer. So after you've been in a school for 5 years and you feel like you need a change, you can put in your paperwork to say that you would like to move and then they will move you. So you give them some information about like, what's your first priority? Is it location? Is it grade level? You tell them all that, then they find you a spot. So even though it's a scary thing, people who do transfer, people who do move, there's something about it that they feel they need to do it. And I agree with you that it's like, it's not easy, but there's something about it that recharge, that, destabilization, I think somewhere deep inside of you, you want it. You just don't know how to ask for it, or you don't know how to show it. Because some people are like, when I tell them I'm moving, they're like, they die. They're like, oh my God, you're going to a new school, new people, new this, new that. Like they're so focused on the fear part of it. And hey, let me tell you, I get it. Because there are postings for consultant positions that I kind of always thought I would apply for. And then when the time came, I was like, no way. That fear of the unknown, of how that works and how would it fit with my family, it took over. So here I am telling you, I'm going to a new school, new grade. I'm totally pumped. But I cannot deny the other side of me that when those postings came out for those positions, I was like, I totally didn't know how it would work. There wasn't enough predictable factors for me to say, okay, let's do this. So, you know, I wimped out on those.
Well, and it's funny you say that too. Cause like with me, with the position I went to, they offered it to me the year previous. And this is a weird situation for me because they were kind of seeking me out knowing my skill set in digital. So it's not traditionally how you would go from one school to another, but they had offered it to me the year prior. And I just said, no, I can't. I need to stay here for various reasons, but concern was part of it. And even when I knew I've known this was the opportunity I needed to take, like this for my professional growth, this is the obvious choice, mm-hmm. this move. And so it's not even a question, but I still doubted like, do I really want to start over? Do I really want to go to a new school? Do I really want it? So yeah, I think that fear is a genuine issue. Absolutely.
I have to say last year, I did apply out to a position. They call it an itinerant position. So it's a position where you're in a number of different schools and the schools that you're in might shift as well, depending on the need. So it was a English language learner position. And I was in a zone last year in about, I don't know, January, February. I was in a zone where I felt like that's the change that I wanted. So I took what we here in Ontario, we have AQ courses, additional qualifications. And so I knew that to apply for that position, I was going to need the part one, English language learner course. So I took it and, you know, there's a whole backstory to why I took it. But one of the reasons was because I thought I wanted to get out of the classroom and I wanted to be a teacher that went from school to school working with these ELL students and help them along their journey. And I went for the interview. And even when I went for the interview, I remember talking to my wife about, you know, do I really want to do this? And she's like, well, you know, work it out. Like, what are the pros? What are the cons? And I did that. And I didn't get the job. And at the time, I was bummed out. But I wasn't 100% bummed out because along my path, my journey in education, I've applied for many positions and postings that I've not gotten. And earlier on in my career, it crushed me. But as time went on, as I learned more about life and about myself, I realized that what seems to be the trend is something better seems to come along. And what I mean better, I mean something seems to come along that really fits with my world and makes me happy. So even though I didn't get the job and I was bummed out, I thought, okay, well, the trend has been that something happens to me or I experience something that I really enjoy that I wouldn't be able to do if I had gotten what it is that I was looking for at that time. So I don't get the job. I feel bummed out. But now I'm talking to you and I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking that my move now, even though it's still classroom, because the classroom was killing me over the past couple of years, just of the demands and the way education has changed, I felt like I needed to get out of those four walls. But I'm not. I'm going back to four walls. And I know, like, my bell times, it works with my family life. Like, things are looking good, whereas I didn't know. It was the great abyss. I had no idea what was going to happen to me, whether I was going to work close to home, far from home, which schools I'd be assigned at. Like, all those things I thought I was ready for last year. But now I'm telling you that, you know, these new postings came out, consultant positions and other cool jobs in the system. And I was flat out saying no. Like, it was kind of cool to know what I was looking for. But at the same time, I want to acknowledge that there's a ton of fear. Right? Like, there's a ton of fear. There's a ton of unknown. And I was not prepared to deal with that. I did not want to deal with that. So, just kind of giving you both sides of the coin. And, you know, as I talk about being excited for this change, I wasn't so excited about possibly becoming a consultant and the change that was going to come with that.
That's interesting. So, I mean, I guess in a lot of ways that tells you that you really did make the right choice, right? Like, you, and in your case, the whatever power may be, you know, that not getting that job worked out for the best. And I think that's good. I think that's a good mindset to have instead of feeling like, dang, I didn't get that job. Now everything's terrible, you know?
Well, yeah. And like I said, that for me, that's been an evolution. And for other people, that might not be it. Other people at this point in their career, like 17 years in, might still be crushed. And I'm not saying I'd never be crushed, but what I'm saying is like, okay, well, I gave it a shot. It didn't happen. Okay. So what can I learn from that? And you know, when I got my debrief about that interview, I was still confused after the debrief. I still didn't know what I was supposed to work on. I didn't feel it was clear, but it was one of those moments where it's like, well, it's over now. So I'm moving on. And it just, I'm glad that I didn't get that job because now I'm really excited for the job I'm going to do. I'm excited about the new school. I'm excited about the new administration. I'm excited about the people that are already there. I'm ready and I'm open to the change that's coming my way. And that's been a big deal for me. This whole talk of change, it upsets me sometimes when the people above me talk about how the people below them need to be flexible and need to be open to change. But when I once talked to a guest on my podcast about that, I remember him, he said something very interesting to me. He said, how come the change is never the principal walks into your room and says, guess what? We're getting 50 new Chromebooks. Are you ready for the change? It's always, guess what? We're losing 50 Chromebooks. Are you ready for the change? It's very rare, in my opinion and in my experience, that you're hit over the head with change that really is a positive one and excites people. It's always, guess what? We're adding more to your plate. So let's be honest here for a second. Let's be true to this thing. The change that I'm experiencing right now is a change that I've chosen for myself. And trust me, it's not easy. Like, different grade, different school, moving, packing, like, all that sucks. Saying hello and goodbye to the people that you've been working with for years. None of that is, like, you know, amazing. but it's part of the change, and it's part of the change that I've accepted for myself. So in that situation, change is good. But, you know, when somebody comes to you and says, you know what, Roland, you've been here for 3 years, it's time for you to move. You need to go to another school. Now, when that's said to you, it's either because you become redundant, they don't need you anymore, or you and admin just haven't hit it off. You don't fit with the vision of the school, which can be a good thing, right? Like if your admin is cool and they've said to you, listen, like what you're doing here, it doesn't fit with the vision of the school. It doesn't align with the school's mission statement, the board's mission statement. It just doesn't work. So let me help you go. That's one thing. It's another thing when they come to you and say it's time for you to go because they're not happy with your service or you don't jive, things aren't working out. So this business about change can be good when you're looking for it and, dare I say, ready for it. And I know sometimes change happens and you're not ready. I get that. But sometimes you're excited for it. But there's a lot of change in education that we're not excited for. It's not good news. It's bad news, but we're supposed to be troopers and we're supposed to soldier on. I have a real issue with that now that I've got like 16, 17 years under my belt. I've got a real issue with that. So this change is one that I've chosen for myself, in consultation with my family and my colleagues. But let's be honest, sometimes people, change gets hit over the head. It comes at them and they're like, but I'm not looking for change. Why are you making me change? Sorry, I kind of took over there. I just felt like the one thing I was talking about led to another, and I felt like I needed to get out.
No, you're all good. This is your show now. I'm just sitting here listening. That's all good. It's all good. That's what my show's about. So I appreciate that. No, I think you're right. I think it is easy for us to sit here and talk about the positives of change and be able to use it as a moment to refresh and renew and consider priorities because we both chose this. I think you're 100% correct there. It's easy for us to find the positives because it's something we chose. The one thing I will say is we have had situations, and that's literally my entire job, where schools have said, hey, guess what? We're handing every kid a laptop. This is going to be great. Are you ready for the change? And even in those cases, it is often met with resistance. And I think that it's really challenging to look at a change as positive when you had no hand in making it come about, even if it's a good thing. So I think that's fair. That I think the choice component is really the critical moment where we're choosing the change, even if someone were given the same opportunity, like, hey, we think it's time for you to move on and go to this better opportunity. Like, this is a better school for you. It's a better fit for you. And there was no work involved. I think that would still be hard to stomach just because the locus of control is external. I think it's easy to look at positive when ultimately you made the choice and there's no one to blame but yourself if it doesn't go well.
Can I add another layer to that?
100%. Let's do
it. I want to add the layer of when you're going to be part of change that maybe you didn't initiate and there are lots of negatives involved, and then how to move with that. So, and I feel I want to say this because I just talked about change in a negative way when it comes at you and you don't want it. But sometimes that change that you're perceiving as negative, it's going to happen anyway. And so you're going to need to deal with it. So how do you do that? Right? Like, do you continue to hold on and harbor the negative, or do you acknowledge the negative, make it clear your position and that you're not impressed or excited for this, but that you will move forward with it? And I want to throw that in there because I think that's what makes us as teachers professional. There have been times where I've been exposed to change that I've balked at the whole way, like from step one to step 10. I'm like, I'm not interested. I don't like this. I've done it begrudgingly, but there have been other times where I've been hit over the head with change that's not been so positive. And then I took it on as a challenge, and I'm not 100% sure why. I think I can tell you that it's probably because the people who were responsible for engaging me and bringing attention to this change were people I trusted and respected. And so when the person or the people that I trust and respect come to me and say, hey, we're doing this to you now, we're pulling the rug out from under you and you're going to need to deal with this, it's easier for me to stomach when it comes from somebody I respect and somebody that I'm connected to in a relationship that I'm engaged with. So for example, the principal I've had for the past 3 years, she's come to me with a lot of negative. And I don't mean negative, like just stuff like, oh, this is happening today. You're not going to be able to do this or that or whatever. It's been easy for me to say, well, that sucks, but okay, let's do this. How am I going to make this work? Whereas when it comes from the system, right, it comes from the system. The system is this, you know, vast collection of people who work somewhere that I don't know, that I never see, that I've only ever heard of.
The sort of the dreaded them. They did this.
Exactly.
This is their idea.
And how much easier is it when they tell you to do something to balk at it? It's so much easier because you don't know who they are. There's no relationship there. There's no, well, I don't want to say there's no respect, but they're, you don't have a relationship. So you don't know them and they. So I want to just throw in the part that as professionals, we do pick up what's put down. We deal with it. Some people, and me included, some people will harbor those negative feelings for a lot longer, but that's because of my immature state and something about me that I've not dealt with yet, really. But there have been other times where I pick up the challenge, and from that challenge has come innovation, right? Things have had to change. How do I deal with that change? So sometimes I take those things on as like, okay, this really sucks, but I'm going to make it work. So let's see how we can do this in a way that might impress people, that might put me in a position where then I can talk to people about what's been done and where I got the ideas from. And I can kind of lead with that because I do have that side of me, that leadership side that enjoys bringing new things to people, but also enjoys helping people work through some of the messiness. And I can give you an example, like in my school board now is we're a Google for Education school board, and it's been something in the making over the past 4 or 5 years. And I'm proud to say that I was part of it. And I know that as things have been coming down the pipe and it reaches us at a level in the school, you know, during a half day PD session, I will hear the teachers complain. And I will hear the teachers say, well, how does this work? And how are we going to do that? And how are we going to do this? And it's been kind of fun over the past 3-4 years to be part of the process of saying, listen, I get where you're coming from with the fear and with the way that this is going to shift things. But I'm telling you that I've done this work, and I'm telling you that, you know, discipline issues dropped significantly, student engagement increased. And then they say, well, do you have the research? And I'm like, I don't have the research. I have years in my classroom of doing it. And leaving in June, feeling totally pumped about what happened during the school year and feeling like time was stolen from me, that I wish I had more time to do more wicked things with my kids to help them with their learning and their development and their growth. That's how I've felt. And anybody who knows me knows that, you know, there's good and bad with me. There's a stuff I complain about all the time. So I'm not one of these guys walking around happy-go-lucky all day long. That's not who I am. But I'm also not walking around complaining about everything all the time, or at least I don't think I am. And so it's been exciting to have the challenge of being part of, you know, them telling us what we should be doing, but also looking for opportunities to make things better, even when you've been dealt a really bad hand.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it's cool that they you deal with are working in teachers into that process. I think that's really critical and something that's not always practiced. I think that's a critical moment. It's a lot, like you said, it's a lot easier to blame the them when you don't know who they are. And when you include teachers in that process, all of a sudden it puts faces and peers on that decision. And that makes it a lot easier to support as a teacher. I think, you know, if you feel like, okay, well, at least some teachers were involved, it may not be perfect, but at least I feel like my voice was heard, even if it wasn't, you know, it was a representative of my voice. I think that's a really critical takeaway there. So there's sort of finding that middle ground of this is a forced change, but it wasn't just a bunch of people who have never actually taught making the decisions. And I think that's where a lot of times we struggle with the they of it all, is a lot of times we feel like they were never teachers and don't know what they're talking about.
In my case, a lot of the theys have been teachers, but you know, have they forgotten what it's like? And I know, hey, maybe one day I'll be one of them. And will I forget? will I easily just forget what it was like to be a teacher? I have a feeling my wife won't let me. I have a feeling she'd be the first one to say, oh my God, you've forgotten what it's like to be in a classroom. Remember those years when you had 34 kids in your class and you couldn't get anything done? Or remember those years where you'd come home and you'd talk about the behavior and basically you spent your whole day dealing with behavior and how do you shift that so that there's more learning happening than discipline? So I have a feeling that I'm surrounded by people who will keep me as real as I can be. But I think that, and here's the other thing too. Priorities shift, right? When you become a them, you have to change your hat. You've got to take your hat off, your teacher hat off, and put on your principal hat or your consultant hat or your superintendent hat or even your director hat, right? Or your trustee hat. You have to change your hat. And I know I've in Ontario, to become a principal, you have to take two principal courses. I've taken them both. And I know that I struggled in the first course with the teacher principal hat. I remember, you know, when we'd be dealing with case studies and we'd be discussing situations, the course instructor would say, as he would listen to us talk, he'd say, okay, you two still have your teacher hats on. You're not teachers anymore. Take your teacher hat off and put on your principal hat. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to forget about human beings and how they operate. You know, you still need to build relationships. You still need to do this. You need to show your teachers you're there for them. You can support them, but you're not a teacher. You're the leader of the school now. And so take off the hat. So I'm talking with my teacher hat on right now. And sometimes in those PD sessions, I'll take my teacher hat off and I will put my principal hat on. And I will say to the people I'm sitting with, listen, I get where they're coming from, kind of. This is where they're coming from. And they're thinking of us, they're thinking about, the principal's not thinking about one classroom, right? The principal is thinking about the entire school. So I give you an example of this. Mm-hmm. So 3 years ago, I did this amazing Ministry of Education project. It was around 3D printing and taking my students' learning to the next level. So I have to throw out props to the Teacher Learning and Leadership Program in Ontario. They are the bomb, and it's some of the best professional development I've ever experienced in my life. So 3 years ago, I engaged in this project, which means that part of the project is I'm going to have a 3D printer. I'm going to have access to a 3D printer for a school year. And so what happened from there was I finished the project and the principal thought, well, you're doing great things with this printer. Are you open to like other people in the school using the printer? And I'm like, 100%. I would say that the only thing I would like to remain like the way it is that can we keep the printer in my room so my next class can benefit from my knowledge and understanding and from having the machine there to troubleshoot and stuff? And can I ask that when students come and want to use it, that they sit down with me and I kind of guide them in, you know, what do you want to use it for? How does it connect to your learning? And let's do this. So kind of like not just to print off things for fun, which we did some of that, but to kind of really connect it to the school experience, because that's why it's here. It's part of the learning experience. And she's like, oh yeah, go nuts. So now we come to this point in time where I'm transferring, I'm leaving. And the rules are that when you get technology or like resources like this from the ministry project, when your project is over, that item now is property of the board of the district. So it was never mine to begin with, but for the year that I had it, it was for me and my project exclusively. But now the project's over, so the school board owns it. They can do whatever they wish with it. So I talked to my principal. I said, listen, I know I'm transferring. I'm going to another school. I would love to bring this 3D printer with me. I know that everybody in the line of succession can say no, but I'm asking, can I please bring this with me? This is why I want to bring it with me. So I told her all the learning, all the excitement, the fact that people in my building thought it was cool, but they never really took the time to like dive into it the way that I did for 3 years. So she said, well, let's talk to my boss and see what my boss says. So then, you know, she talked to the people she needs to talk to. She told them, this is what he's been doing with it. I've seen it firsthand. I've experienced it. It's legit. He's not just messing around. There's a lot of learning going on. He thinks he can take this to the next place. Her boss said yes. So now it's moving. So I was fully prepared for them to say no. I'm being honest here. I was fully prepared. I thought, okay, I need to ask, because if I don't ask, then it's on me. But I was fully prepared for them to say, no, it's staying here. And I was going to be okay with that, because I was able to put my school hat on and say, you know, is it best for Chidiac to take this thing with him? Or will it serve, you know, the 400 kids in the building when he's gone? And they said yes. So they could see the benefit of, no, let this guy take it. It's been his thing for 3 years. He's really learned the ins and outs. So sure, he can take it, since nobody else really caught on to it or whatever. But they could have easily said, no, we're thinking about the school. We're not thinking about you. And I get that, because I've pretended to put that hat on, and I understand their position. Doesn't mean I have to like it. So that was just an example of, I'll be sitting in PD. They'll be telling us, okay, you need to do this now with your numeracy block. You need to insert these things into numeracy. You need to do it daily. Start now. And everybody's looking at each other like, are they kidding? And I'm like, no, they're not kidding. They're not thinking about the aggravation that you and I are experiencing right now. They're not thinking about the fear that we're experiencing right now and feeling incompetent. And how are we going to do this? Where are we going to find the time to do this? They're thinking kids are going to learn. It's going to improve test scores. It's going to make them better students, better learners. It's going to improve their love and understanding of numeracy. That's what they're thinking. Then I get the weird looks, and then we move on to the next topic.
Something tells me you're pretty used to getting the weird looks.
I am, for a number of different reasons. Totally.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of when you're the person that's able to switch hats, because I don't think a lot of people are, but when you're the person that's able to recognize, okay, when you're looking from their perspective, that empathy component, being able to recognize other people's perspective, I don't feel like a lot of people have that. So when you do, in my experience, you tend to get a lot of weird looks where you're like, okay, I don't have to like this, but I see where they're coming from. And other people are like, no, this is awful because it's not good for me. Then I think you get a lot of weird looks like that.
And everybody does that, right? Everybody does the, I've said it many times, I'm like, this is really going to suck for me. You know, as the whole school is like, this is going to be amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the cheerleaders and I'm giving them the look like, do your cheerleading somewhere else. I'm not interested, because I'm struggling with this right now, and I'm going to be struggling for a while. And this is the cool thing about going to a new school, right? Like, I'm going to have a new principal. I'm going to have new staff members. So I already know, in a way, unless they say something or do something that really hits me where my values live, I'm just going to sit back and I'm going to take it as it comes. And I'm going to get a feel for this new community. I'm going to get a feel for how people operate. And I know that I'm low man on the totem pole. I'm right at the bottom. So whatever it is I've been used to for the last 3 years, it's all gone. It's all gone. I need to establish street credit in my new school. I need to build relationships. I need to have a good time, right? But that's not, nothing anymore is automatic. Like you said, I don't know who's in charge of what. And I got to get to know the custodian, right? Like, I got to get to know the office admin assistants. I got to get to know how people operate. And I have to do my best to not do something that's going to make them dislike me from day one, because that would really suck.
Yeah. Agreed. Well, Roland, we've been going for 45 minutes almost, and we literally haven't gotten to any of my three questions. And I know you have to leave shortly, so we may have to schedule part two. But I at least want to get to my first question before we run out of time here today. Roland, wow. There was so much greatness in this episode. Thank you so much for talking with me, and I really cannot wait to release part two next week. To connect with Roland, find him on Twitter. He's at rchids, R-C-H-I-D-S. Also, be sure to check out his podcast with Chris Clough, the Decoded podcast, on iTunes or YouTube,
And you can also check out his digital landing page online as well. Links to all of those things are in the show notes. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Schreffler, and the same on Instagram as well. I love to hear from you there. That's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Or check out the feedback page on my website, which gives you options for feedback as well, which you can find at bradschreffler.com/feedback. Until next week, don't be afraid to get out of autopilot and make a change. Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio. Your voice is right here.